Another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined every single week by Jeff Witte, who actually decided to stay in the frame this week. CFTV Live is brought to you by our friends at Agrigold. Agrigold, they know corn. Check them out online at agrigold.com. They can explain anything about Agrigold, probably way better than I can, to be completely honest. Yeah. Including Gray. Hi, Adam Gray. You're here as well.
How you fellas doing?
Now that you're done telling people to kiss your behind.
Yeah, well, you.
We can say ass.
You can say it. If you come at me on Twitter, I'm gonna come back at you. All right. But how about the Cyclones, guys? What a great week.
That was fun.
That was awesome.
That was fun. But what was weird is even at 35-3, I can't be the only one in saying like, ooh, we need a couple more. You know, like with Texas Tech's offense, with where it was in the game, midway through the second quarter, 35-3. I was like,
When Kamari picked it, I felt good.
And once we got to pick six, I was like, all right, hey, we're all right. Mm-hmm. I can live with this. This is something that I can finally relax. I'm just enjoying this absolute ass whooping, which is what it was.
Said ass a lot of times already.
It's all right. After a big victory, you can say stuff like that.
Yeah, we lost, and you can't say ass. You can't say ass.
For some reasons, Jeff's mic is going in and out.
Is it? Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds weird to me, I guess.
Is it plugged in, guys? Are we plugged in? I don't want to have to start the show over again.
No, I'm 100% certain we're plugged in.
Okay. We're good then.
My sound?
Yeah. Now it's working a little better.
Cool. Good.
So, what? I guess first, what's your like overarching thoughts from the game? I mean, there's not even much an analysis to do because Iowa State just kicked their butts on both sides of the ball pretty much the whole day.
Ass, dude. One of us went to journalism school and one of us didn't go to journalism school. One of us just talks. So, but the thing that, like, the takeaway from this game is Iowa State played really well in every facet of that game. Uh-huh. From offense to defense to special teams. Everything that they did better than Texas Tech. And there have been games, you know, you think about the Baylor game that comes to mind right away. Their offense and special teams were excellent. They had a couple of big punt returns. They had, you know, they scored 42 points, but the defense didn't come up. And then you look at the Texas game in the first half, the defense shows up and they're rolling. And then all of a sudden the offense stops. Well, I would say finally for six consecutive quarters, including the Kansas game, Iowa State in all three phases has dominated their opponent. Now, the thing that excites me about this week is there are still ways that you can be negated from feeling good about these wins. Mm-hmm. Because you can say, well, it was Kansas. Or, well, Texas Tech had lost 6 out of 7. Well, it was San Jose State. Those are wins that you can dismiss. West Virginia has lost twice this season. And one of those is to Oklahoma last week when they racked up 600 yards of offense. So West Virginia is a really good team. If you get this win this week, that's 3 in a row to end the season, and your wins got better as they went along. So this is it's a really – not a make or break because the season's – there's not a lot to make out of the season. But there's a way to finish with a huge amount of upside, especially going into a basketball season that should be really good. So this kind of could be the galvanizing exclamation point on a rebuilding year that, like I mentioned in the column that I wrote for the Register – we're finally seeing the acceleration. You're starting to see the improvement that they've made turn into actual good play. Rather than just being a bad team that's getting better, they're now a good team that's getting better.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you can win this last game, especially out on the recruiting trail, you can look in that and be like, we won our last three games. Like, we're this close to being, you know, able to take a jump and not just be a 3-4-5 win program to being like a 6-7-8 win program. You know?
Yeah, and that's also probably really easy to sell to recruits, too, because look at the guys that have been doing it.
Yeah.
Jacob Park's a sophomore. Dave Montgomery's a true freshman. Deshante Jones, a true freshman. Hakeem Butler's a redshirt freshman. Guys that – Alan Lazard's still a junior, but you still have all of these talented dudes, these young guys. Like, I was going through this with somebody. What if we go through who does Iowa State lose for next year? They lose one defensive back in Wiltz. They lose one linebacker in Seeley. Defensive line takes a couple hits with Myers, Tucker, and Thomas. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest, most affected group. the quarterbacks both come back. All of your running backs except Harger and all your wide receivers except Daly. Everybody comes back except on the defensive line. And the offensive line, you have a lot of injured or redshirted guys that are going to be probably better than what's playing right now.
Yeah.
So this is a really young team that would, like you said, if you win this game, you win your final three with a really young roster, you go talk to a recruit and be like, look, we brought in some talented kids. They got to play right away, and we're getting better, and we're building a foundation for going for the future. All of these things you can be a part of. This, so that's not a much easier sell, because you can still sell the improvement this season. But if they win this game, it's just, again, another feather in the cap of that coaching staff to go recruit.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this. Where do you think that Julian Good-Jones would fit in? If, you know, Sean Foster's probably going to be a tackle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Campos comes back. Does he move to in the inside, you
would
think?
I would think so. Yeah. He was taking a lot of reps at center.
He was going to be the center until Boba came in.
I would assume that's probably where he moves into. Because he's played, he's taken snaps in this offense. A guy like Ben Lamont comes to mind, where Lamont was a guard and a tackle in his younger years, and then for his junior, senior year, once Reggie Stevens left, he shifted into center because he played so much football.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've detailed before, the center has to understand the entire offensive line. He has to be the quarterback or the point guard of that group. So a guy that's played a lot of snaps, who has the capacity to make calls and decisions, is probably the guy that would fill in for Bobek once Bobek leaves. So I would think Good-Jones moves in, and then you have, unless the guy, the number 73, I don't recall his name, the guy that came in for Bobek when they put in their subs.
Will Windham.
So Windham came in and played center. So unless he's doing that, then Jones would move to guard. So they have options now, and they have a lot of really talented kids. And I can tell you this, Sean Foster is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched him in practice, watched him a little bit in person. The kid is really good. And if he wasn't redshirting right now, he would probably be one of the starters. But you want to – he was a little skinny in the early part of fall, where you just don't want to throw him to the wolves right away, because Campos had that happen, and he got lit up for the first 7 games of his college career.
Yeah.
And now you can kind of give him a redshirt year, let him build some size, understanding a little bit, and then turn him loose.
He looks like a kid that needs to put on about 20 or 30 pounds still, Foster.
He's a kid, if you've seen him in person, Foster's a kid who has a frame that can handle about 325 or 330.
Yeah.
What is he,
280 right now?
He's a big dude, but then you go, oh, you could put on a little bit more. I think he's, what, 290, 295? I don't know what his status is, but
sure.
Anyway, let's not talk about what's going to be next year. Iowa State just beat Texas Tech by 56 points.
All right, let's go to the board.
Okay, so like was detailed by many people, Iowa State kicked ass, but also Texas Tech's defense is really bad. So I'm actually going to go to the whiteboard first, because I'm going to detail, I don't know if we've ever gone over what a Tampa 2 defense looks like. So cover 2 means 2 deep safeties. What a Tampa 2 does, I'll just real quick a brief teaser on what cover 2 looks like. So cover 2, these 2 deep safeties, so if this is, say we're going hashes here, these 2 deep safeties have to take essentially from the hash and spread out. Essentially what they have to do is these guys have to cover everything deep. And then these guys are going to play flat zones across the middle like this. Well, the big weakness of a cover 2 defense is right here. So this seam and these shots, these are your holes. These are your seams in a cover 2 defense. So what Tampa 2 does is Tampa 2 lets these guys fade a little wider, because what this middle linebacker does is run all the way back to kind of intercept anything, because the way you're going to beat a cover 2 is that. Something like this, and throw it right down the seam, use this receiver to pull him out, use that receiver to pull this safety, and then there's nobody for this. So what Tampa 2 does is that this Mike linebacker drops underneath any route that you're going to have, because then there's no way for this quarterback, because he's throwing right through a linebacker, there's no way for a quarterback to actually get the ball in to a Tampa 2. So they drop underneath the deepest player. Okay, point of Tampa 2 defense. And this is the reason why it's called Tampa 2, is because Tony Dungy created this with Derek Brooks.
I thought it was Tampa Bay. Is it Monty Kiffin?
Monty Kiffin. So Monty Kiffin and Tony Dungy, when they were in Tampa Bay with Derek Brooks as the middle linebacker, would run him, because he was so athletic, underneath whatever deep crosser may be. So if this guy, for example, in a Tampa 2, say this guy does this, he's not going to overshoot. He's going to drop as deep as this is going to be necessary, or either one of these inside routes. So he's going to drop underneath. So he's going to bail, and then whenever there's something that's coming forward, he's going to come forward underneath it. Okay, pull up the Allen Lazard one-handed touchdown, which, taking aside the fact that that's an incredible catch, Iowa State knew that they were going to get cover two, and they knew that – they had a thought that it was going to be a Tampa two. Okay, this is a ballsy throw by Jacob Park to actually deliver this ball. So with the, what these guys are going to do – so you have cover two, cover two, cover two, cover two, cover two, deep safety, deep safety. So these guys are going to drop here. This linebacker, you can already see him bailing. He's bailing to drop underneath everything. So this corner is going to go to the flat. This linebacker is going to the flat, going to be hook curl. This guy's going to stay in the flat here. Like I said, deep safety, deep safety. They're going to run a seam. Allen Lazard is going to run this right here. So go ahead and play. So when you guys saw this, freeze this for a second. So when you guys saw this on the field, you saw two guys converging on Allen with the ball, and you're like, man, he made a catch between the safeties. Wrong. He made the catch between the safety and underneath the linebacker. So play a little farther. Freeze. That's the Tampa 2 linebacker behind Allen Lazard, a wide receiver. Okay, this today's episode is going to be partially great job, Iowa State, and partially, what the hell are you doing, Texas Tech? So this is a Tampa 2 linebacker that has now dropped past the wide receiver. Allen Lazard makes a sick one-handed catch, and you have one safety that's underneath and another safety that's trying to get over the top, which he couldn't get to because he had to hold another player over here. So Iowa State did a really good job of getting this done. Now rewind this to about here. Am I not talking?
No, you are. You're good. Just take this.
Trading headsets real quick. While you're talking, whenever I hear Tampa 2, I mean, Monte Kiffin, obviously, but you know what I think of, the first thing I think of? Gene Chizik bringing the Tampa 2 here, and our defense sucked. And now Texas Tech runs the Tampa 2, and their defense sucks. So is Monte Kiffin the only one that can teach us Tampa 2, or what?
Derek Brooks is the reason why Tampa 2 works. Yeah. In order to run a Tampa 2 defense,
you got to have a stud middle linebacker to cover.
Here's what's going on. So actually run this a little bit farther back. So you got a guy that's bailing on the snap. So he bails. It turns into essentially like a cover 2.5. It's almost cover 3 with this guy occupying the middle of the field. Now, the reason why I say it's a ballsy throw from Jacob Park is because his line of sight, thinking about it from a first-person perspective, what do his eyeballs see? His eyeballs see linebacker directly where he wants to throw the ball. So this is gutsy by him, but the reason why Tampa 2 can work is this guy is going to bail, and then if we have a deep route, this route ends up stopping, but if there's a deep route and then we get a dig underneath, this guy has to be athletic enough that once he's bailing on this play and he sees the ball thrown short, he's got to put his foot in the ground and get vertical to tackle or contact anybody who's coming over the middle, which you got to be able to stop a linebacker frame and redirect like a defensive back. So it's really hard to do a really good Tampa 2. A lot of times guys will use this in a long down to distance situation just to get out because you can let everybody tackle underneath. But it's great job, ballsy throw, great catch, terrible defense.
Even a great middle linebacker, though, wouldn't they have trouble guarding Allen Lazard? I mean, that's 35 yards from the scrimmage right there is how far back it is. I mean, even if we're talking about, you know, one of the all-time great middle linebackers, that's still a tough cover for him to cover that far downfield, right?
He's not trying to cover a man. He's trying to cover a space.
An area.
So essentially what the goal of that is let's just take away this aspect of the field. Because if the generally speaking, if it's not Jacob Park, you're going to see a linebacker dropping to Tampa 2, and you assume that post route is gone. You can't throw to it anymore because there's no way to get the ball over the top of the linebacker, underneath the safety, because it's going to close up too fast. But Park had the guts enough to actually throw it. So you're not trying to cover a man because, like you said, Derek Brooks versus Allen, you know, any linebacker versus Allen Lazard is advantage Lazard. But if you don't do it right and you overrun a post, what the hell is the point of having that linebacker is essentially just playing a cover three safety, like from here. There's no point in doing that.
That's got to be one thing Iowa State fans have to be excited about Park, because in years past, I'm not throwing other quarterbacks, and maybe they didn't have the ability to make that throw, but they never even tried to make that throw a lot of times, correct? I mean, for me, I like gunslingers. I love seeing the guy that will take that throw and throw it, say, hey, Allen Lazard, as our 6'5 stud wide receiver, I'm making this throw.
Yeah. No, it's to make that throw is really hard.
Yeah.
To attempt that throw is really gutsy. Well, so to have both is pretty impressive.
It's funny because after the game, Allen said, Park's the only guy that we have that would make that throw.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because it's like he kind of laughed about it. And then we went over to Park and said, what's that mean? He's like, I don't know. You have to ask him. I don't know what that means.
So this is, yeah, that he's got no fear. And, you know, again, another ridiculous stat that I tweeted at and used in the article. Iowa State had more touchdowns, almost 2-1, more touchdowns than incompletions on the day. They had 5 incompletions and 9 touchdowns scored. So the fearlessness is not translating to recklessness, which is a really good sign for the future. So to talk about more, I want to talk about more bad defense because it's really funny. Go to Butler's touchdown. So
why do you hate Cliff Kingsbury's defense?
You gave up 66 points in a windy conditions to a team whose high in Big 12 history was 52, right?
Against Texas Tech.
Against Texas Tech. And one of those was a kick return touchdown.
Yep.
And in that same game, it was the year before, AJ Klein had a kick return touchdown. Okay, so this is the reason why I wanted to actually
bring AJ Klein had a kick return touchdown?
Jeremy
Reeves had a kick return touchdown.
In the 52-point game.
In the 52-point game in the year prior, AJ Klein had a interception return.
I was going to say, what?
AJ Klein.
Why was AJ Klein returning a kick?
Kick return. Okay, so here's the reason why I wanted to bring this play up, because this is the predominant defense that Texas Tech actually showed to Iowa State, which if you've coached against Iowa State in the past, this is probably a good decision because this is what teams have done. I mean, this is a little drastic having everybody at the line, but they've loaded up the box and played loose coverage on the outside and essentially they dared people to throw. Mm-hmm. And they said, I don't think your quarterback and receivers are good enough to beat us in coverage, so we're going to stop the run and dare you to do it. So this is what Texas Tech did. So this is cover zero. Again, how many deep safeties? None. So what does that mean? If there's no safety help over the top, it's true man-to-man across the board. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay? We have 11 guys. 7 of them are right here. So what Texas Tech is doing is essentially saying, our guy is better than your guy, and we're going to get to him before you get the ball out. Okay, here's where that falls short. You're playing off coverage with your hips open to the inside. What that means is you're willing to bail and assume that any inside route you're going to be able to drive in on. Okay, cool. So in order to drive in on a route, you have to be close enough to drive to that route. So what Jacob Bark is doing, when he sees that it's cover zero, even at this point, even if it's not cover zero and they bail these guys out, there's no way that these guys are going to get underneath a route of one of these three if it's a deeper throw. So he knows, I'm essentially going to take the best matchup that's beyond a certain point, because that guarantees, if this is a bluff, that none of these guys is going to run deep enough to get there. So this is Hakeem Butler. So go ahead and hit play. And knowing that this is man-to-man coverage, you have no help. Okay, freeze. Here's Hakeem Butler. Go ahead and hit play a little farther. Freeze. There's the corner. Okay? There's no damn reason why this guy is here. So the way that this guy is playing is this would be a cover one style. Cover one or cover three. If you're playing like a three or a combination, like a deep zone, like a three man under, something like that, something funky. If you're playing out and inside, this depth is funneling the receiver to somebody else. There ain't a soul around. There's 7 guys in the line of scrimmage. There's nothing that even indicates that you possibly could have non-man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So what Butler did, you can't see it in this footage because the TV copy doesn't get it, but Butler, all he did was sell hard to the outside. The cornerback bit it and ate it like a freaking Thanksgiving turkey and ran all the way back here. Once Butler made the cut across, he's already pretty much quit on the play. So watch the effort here from number one trying to track down Hakeem Butler too. So play it a little bit farther. Okay? Great effort. Jogs into the end zone. Here, buddy. Let me help you out.
At the end of it, he actually almost ran away from Butler.
Yeah,
like, he wasn't even running at him. No. He was running away from him. Like, I'm just going to run parallel just so the coaches don't think I'm not running.
I don't want... Like, again, that's a great route because to get a guy to bite like that is really hard to do. And Hakeem Butler is a phenomenal talent who I believe only played high school football for 2 years prior to getting to Iowa State. So he's still learning a lot, but his physical tools And the guidance of someone like Alan Lazard is giving him the capacity to do more, but that's awful defense. That is awful defense. And
what would,
I think,
what would happen to a guy that can run back to Iowa State sideline after after something like that?
I can speak from experience.
What would Wally Burnham have said to that guy?
Wally Burnham, I can't say that on air. We've said ass and damn. You can't say what a defensive coach would want to say to that. But if that was at Iowa State with the defensive backs that Iowa State has, that kid wouldn't play this game or the next game with that type of effort. Okay, can I do one more really bad defense?
Well, first I have a question about Park on this throw here, because just to be fair to him, the Kansas State game, he threw one of the interceptions that I think we both agree is the worst turnover of the season for Iowa State, which they've only turned the ball over 11 times, I think, this year, 12 times. It's a record.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. But anyway, this play here almost reminds me of the same thing. He double, kind of almost triple pumps on this before making the throw here.
So this is another thing that I was actually really impressed with, the footwork of Jacob Park. So, again, you have seven guys here, and you have four wide receivers, which means I have five offensive linemen, quarterback, running back. This seven, I have seven people and seven people. The quarterback's one of them. Numbers-wise, we can't block everyone. So this is what we talk about with having something that's hot or understanding where the float is. So remember the Baylor game, that Carson Epps touchdown that Joel floated to his left, set up, and threw a quick in route. It was kind of a rub route to the number one receiver. This is sort of what Park does. So hit play. And watch Jacob Park too here, or watch Jacob Park here. So he knows that he doesn't have a ton of time. He knows that he has to float backwards into his right based on where the protection is, because my running back's to the left. He knows that he can't sit in the pocket, nor can he sit and stand stationary. So he knows where his unblocked defender is, and it's going to be right up here, which somehow this guy bails off for. There's, again, that's inexplicable. There's no reason for that guy to bail back. But he knows where his unblocked defender is going to be, so he knows where he's going to set up and where he's going to throw from. So he felt the pocket well, and I think he just wanted – that wasn't a double clutch like he's, I'm going to force this throw into somebody. That's, my feet aren't set. I can't deliver this ball with the needed accuracy. So he went, nope, set my feet and throw.
And then he threw a dart.
Then threw a dart. I think the best ball – the best football that he threw on the day was the very first back shoulder to Alan Lazard.
Yeah, that was
into
nice.
The wind. That was – an unbelievable, I mean, that thing released here, and at highest it was here. That was a terrific throw and a great play by Allen.
I think this touchdown was the point when the Texas Tech bench had like 30 guys on the three-seated heated bench. I think this was the point when they and everybody put the parkas on. It was time to go home, back to
like,
Lubbock.
Yeah, the way that they were around the benches and the heaters is like in like late July, and you flick on the porch light and there's just a bunch of moths that are sitting around a light. That's pretty much what they were to a heater. I just enjoy talking about this because, again, we're not talking about Iowa State with having fundamental lapses. Iowa State has played fundamentally sound for the majority of this season. We talked about it early in like the Northern Iowa and the Iowa game. Iowa State was making some of these mistakes. They're not, and they haven't been. So this is partially – like I say this because it's fun, because I good football makes me smile and bad football makes me laugh. So – but what's nice about this is that Iowa State is not doing this. This is another team, and you can say like, oh, that's what it's like to take advantage of mistakes like that. Okay, so this is one of Joel Lanning's 94 touchdowns that he scored on Saturday.
I think he just scored another one.
He just scored again. Congratulations. Troy Davis's records, which, by the way, Lanning scored five touchdowns. Troy Davis did that twice against nine-man boxes. That's insane.
It's impressive. Like, to be fair, though, he got a little bit more carries than Lanning.
Yeah, no,
got.
He did.
Yeah.
He wasn't still playing Texas Tech, though.
No. He was playing guys with there's like one safety here, there's one receiver out wide, and everybody else is in the box, and he still managed to get through. It's still unreal how good Troy Davis was. Anyway, so, okay, we're in a heavy set. Iowa State knows it. Texas Tech knows it. The reason why you know Texas Tech knows it is because this is the middle of the field safety. The middle of the field safety is no longer in the middle of the field. He's adjusted up to the side of the tight end. They recognize that there's a strength of formation, yet they still have to acknowledge that there are wide receivers out there because Joel can throw. So they can't just pile everybody into the box. Mm-hmm. They have to place a sort of version of cover zero. This is a soft cover zero. So these guys, these are linebackers, and what linebackers have to do is they have to fit run. And one of the things that we were talking about before is you don't read run by looking in the backfield. You read run by looking at the lineman. There's the low hat versus the high hat. If a lineman takes off like this, it means he's coming at you, and it's a run play. If a lineman does this, it means it's a pass play because it's a high hat.
Mm-hmm.
If a lineman does this, it means it's a pull, and the play's probably going that way. Now, those are the things that you see. So as a linebacker, your read, say you're the Mike linebacker, your read is these middle three linemen. If you see a puller and down blocks, so down block meaning I'm stepping this way, and a puller is going to come behind me that way. The play is going to follow the puller, and I'm trying to create a hole for that. So as a linebacker, I can't get stuck on this side of a lineman. I've got to get here. As two linebackers, there's a puller. I have to bracket that puller. I got to get one linebacker. If there's going to be one to pull, I'll get it one linebacker to this side of me, one linebacker to this side of me, and shoot through where that's going to be because this is where the play wants to go, is behind the puller. Okay. Basic fundamentals out of the way. You have a lead back that's to this side that Iowa State is probably 90%. They run landing behind an H-back. That's a pretty good indicator where the play is going to go. You have
your keys. Sam Buckner did a nice job in that role.
Yeah. He actually did a good job all day.
Yeah.
There was one play where you know you did it right when your quarterback's in the end zone celebrating a touchdown and you're 9 yards in the back of the end zone and some tech defender tries to hip toss you because you kicked his ass that far. So you have H-back to the side, landing in the backfield, and you have offensive lineman down. Go ahead and hit play for just a second. Okay. Freeze. Oh, look, we got a puller. Okay. We have a puller, and we have an H-back, and we have a quarterback running to that side. What are the things that are telling you, all of those things are telling you, the run is going to that side. You see the puller, you have to fit. Okay. Run it back to about here, Gray. Okay, these two guys are responsible for that fit because this linebacker has to play contain. He's got a D-gap player, but if he gets cracked, there has to be an edge to this defense. These two are responsible for setting an edge. These two linebackers have to fit underneath any pull. This defensive end is going to take care of the cutback. This defensive tackle is going to take care of the B-gap. Okay, these two guys are responsible for that run fit. Go ahead and hit play. Freeze. What is that? Run that back a little bit. So knowing, again, we're a little farther right to about here, okay? There's a puller going that way. There's an H-back going that way. There's a quarterback in there that runs 90% of the time to that side. You've got one, two, three bodies in the backside, and this linebacker decides, nah, I don't want to get over there. He decides to insert backside B. Backside B-gap. Play should be in the front side B-gap. Like, that's not just – that's three gaps off. That's not just a kind of mistake. That's a mistake that gets – so this frontside linebacker fits it fine. This backside linebacker totally misplays everything. There's no safety help over the top. And then go ahead and hit play. He's inserted too far behind. There ain't nothing for him to do. You are now trying to chase down Joel Lanning.
Hey, more good effort for number three, though. he was the last one closest to him.
Like, I don't mean this to be, like, mean. But you got to call a spade a spade. This is awful defense. Okay, one more awful defense, and then I wanted to talk about good Iowa State's defensive strategy. I don't know how much time we have left, but this is fun.
We're good.
We're okay. Good. Yeah, we're good.
So we'll go to – this is – again, there's stuff that makes – there's stuff that makes no damn sense at all. So, again, let's talk about what a defensive player is doing or what a defensive player is going to look for. So a lot of times you talk to a linebacker or a corner or a safety – safeties, generally speaking, they have true run fits, but they're more reactionary because they have to fit outside, but if the ball comes to them, they got to tackle the ball. So you talk about a safety in a corner, their alignment is more important than their assignment because if they're in the wrong spot, it doesn't matter what they do from there, they're not going to be able to get there. Okay, let's assess the situation. Iowa State has center, guard, tackle, tight end, wing. Okay, that means there is a A-gap, B-gap, C-gap, D-gap, E-gap. So you have to have defenders to fill all of those. Plus, you've got a lead blocker. So they've got a – Iowa State has a heavy set on the front side. You have to match that heavy set. No. Not Texas Tech. They have one guy to play the E-gap, and you have a C-gap player, you have a B-gap player, and you have one guy to maybe make the difference. Okay? They're playing two over one on the top side. because clearly that's what Joel Lanning does when he's in the game.
That is a tight end. There is a tight end right there, isn't there?
There's a wing.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got 1, 2, 3 guys to cover two. On the goal line, Joel Lanning, who has thrown, I believe, 9 passes in 2 games and has run for now, I believe, 6 touchdowns in 2 weeks. Okay, do your homework, guys. What is this going to be? So what I talk about, they're 90% running behind an H-back. H-back. They're pretty predominantly running behind a tight end. Tight end. They have a running back to the call side. 3 keys. Go ahead and hit play. Let's see if they get another indicator of what's going on. Freeze it. Oh my God, we have a puller too. There's 4 things that are telling you there's a run to the front side, to the left side of the offense, the right side of the defense. Rewind this a little bit farther. Rewind this to give or take here. Okay? Where is the defense? There's nothing there. Like, this is, again.
The best part about this, the running back has no one to block.
There's no one there.
He has no one to block.
Because there's no defender for this. There's no D-gap defender. There's an E-gap defender, C, B, A. There's no D-gap defender.
I'm kind of laughing at this guy that is getting blocked by the puller. I'm pretty sure he fell down before he got blocked, and then the puller just had to fall on top of him to pretty much make the block.
That's not bad defense.
Oh, okay.
So this is probably a corner or a safety.
Mm-hmm.
You're staring down a lot more mass than what you are. So one of the things, if you can't take on a block, one thing they're going to do is they'll tell you to just create a pile where you get a puller coming around. I'm just going to fall down and let the lineman fall on top of me and just create a heap of mass to not get through.
Is that a good idea though, when the whole play is already past you?
Well, that's not bad. This is bad. They're so wrong. Like this guy, that guy did nothing. He didn't stay towards the receivers. He didn't say towards the box. He just lightly trotted over the end zone.
Guys, you got to watch Mike Warren here. He doesn't know what to do. He's like, what do I do with my hands? Who am I blocking?
Here.
I don't have anyone.
And again, Sean Buckner. Run that back. And just watch Sean Buckner on this play. So Sean Buckner's right here. Okay, we talk about a lot of times you make fun. Like, why are you throwing to this kid? Why is this kid in the field? This is why. You know what I said? If you're doing a good job when you get hip tossed in the back of the end zone, because you kicked his ass all the way through the end zone. Watch Sean Buckner. Go ahead and hit play. Okay? This is a linebacker. Pops him good. Drives him 7 yards in the back of the end zone. And tech guy, only thing that he can do is try and hip toss the guy 7 yards in the back of the end zone. That's a thank you. I'll come see you next play. So everything Iowa State did was great. And everything Tech did was as bad as I've ever seen a Big 12 defense play. Alignment, coaching, the guys didn't know. The Texas Tech defense didn't know what they were doing. They didn't do what they didn't know very well. And then their effort was awful to match all of those things.
Well, because usually if a team scores 66, I think a coach can go back and say, we tackled terribly. Right. They weren't even in a position to tackle most of this game. I mean, Joel Lanning on 5 of his touchdown runs, I think, got touched maybe once.
He got, like, shoelaced one time.
So what do you think that this is? I mean, is it just not knowing what the other team does? Is this not studying before? Like, is this maybe they thought they were just going to be able to destroy Iowa State and it didn't matter?
Well, the Texas Tech defense has been really, really bad all year.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons is because they're really young. And just generally speaking, like understanding how to properly run a Tampa 2 can conceptually make sense, but if you've never really done it a lot, it's hard to do in person. What the other issue is in not giving that out, and not giving that ole to that kind of technique, is look at TCU last year. TCU this year is a little bit, they've had some issues. But TCU's defense last year, by the time the season ended, there were 8 starters on that defense were completely new.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those kids were freshmen, yet they still managed to scrap together a respectable game against almost everybody. They gave up, I believe, 30 points 2 or 3 times, and that's it. Because they understand, they're well-coached in the sense of, what is the minimum thing that I have to do in order to make this play successful? And that's align and understand your key. And if you get there and you don't make a tackle, that's understandable. We're going to make that right. But if you don't understand what the play call is and you're put in really bad situations in the first place, there ain't nothing you can do about it. So maybe this defensive staff just needs another year to get there, because they've had – Texas Tech's had 7 defensive coordinators in 9 seasons. So it's really hard to develop any type of understanding or continuity along a defense. But on the other hand, the defensive guys just have to at some point be like, look, we're done giving up points and we're going to take it upon ourselves to do better. On the flip side, this is the Iowa State offense, or so Iowa State Iowa State's offense scored against Texas Tech defense because Iowa State's offense was really good and Texas Tech's defense was just abysmal. On the other side of that, Iowa State's defense was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas Tech's defense or Texas Tech's offense wasn't bad. Texas or Iowa State's defense was just that good. And one of the things that I didn't realize was at the time I was watching is I was wondering why is Pat Mahomes so inconsistent today? One, he's got a bum shoulder, but that cat's been dinged up his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I didn't realize was his weakness is booting to his left, to his offensive left, because one of the things that he doesn't like to do is he doesn't like to reset. So when you're booting to your left, the only way to get an accurate throw is to get your shoulders back around.
Yeah.
So you can't run to your left and deliver a ball. You have to set up the throw that you're going to have by doing one of two things, either bellying back and getting your shoulders back around coming downhill, or booting to your left, flipping to reset and throw. He doesn't like to do either one of those things, and I didn't see it. Coach Haycock did. So their entire scheme was predicated on blitzing off of the offensive right side to force him this way. It doesn't mean they're even trying to get a sack. It just means force him to run this direction to make bad decisions. So watch this blitz. This is the second interception. It's the interception by Everett Edwards. So play and freeze, okay? That's a contain player. So the contain player, meaning we talk about building that pocket, there's one edge of the pocket. So I'll actually come back over the board because it's easier to show. So if we're talking about building an edge, Iowa State, what they did is they brought pressure on this side to build this looking a pocket that looks like this. Okay? The reason why you build a pocket that looks like this is because that's the predicted outcome. So Iowa State wanted Texas Tech to take that out. This is 59-10. At this point, Pat Mahomes is frustrated with the fact that he's not had anything good go for him. So go ahead and play a little bit farther. And he wants to bail. He wanted to bail to his left. He didn't know what he was going to do and just ended up throwing the ball up for grabs. So go ahead and watch this one more time. And watch how passively this edge is set. We have an aggressive blitz. You have an aggressive set on the top side to contain. You have a slow edge on the bottom side to try and force him out. And at the time he doesn't want to get forced out, he's going to make a bad play.
It was a nice play by Thad Daniels, too.
This is an excellent play by everybody.
Yeah.
Because they forced enough pressure to get him uncomfortable. And then the secondary got to compete with the bad ball that he got to throw. So Iowa State's defense, based on the premise of moving him to his left, was everything that you'd want to set up in a defensive scheme, and then they just executed it perfectly.
So you're saying that John Haycock just put the book out on how to stop Texas Tech?
I guarantee you, because Mahomes is a junior, what he's going to be doing most of his offseason.
He'll be quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings next year, so it won't matter. But
he'll be a draft pick. He's going to bounce out of Texas Tech. But the thing that the knock on him is going to be exactly what we talked about. That's the design. That's the book to slow him down. Force him one way and make him do something he doesn't want to do, get his shoulders around. If he doesn't get his shoulders around, you're going to be fine because he trusts his arm too much.
You know, one of the only quarterbacks I ever saw that could throw against their body and do it well was Seneca Wallace. He was really, really good at that. Most quarterbacks, and that's my question is, why was Iowa State so smart in doing that? I mean, let's be honest, there's a lot of good defensive coaches out there that have not been able to figure out a way to stop Patrick Mahomes, and Iowa State made it look easy. I mean, like, how did they – I mean, what are other coaches thinking and not trying to push him over to his left?
Well, a lot of times, if you don't have the secondary to cover it, one thing that Mahomes will do is he'll bail to one side and then
circle back.
He'll circle back the other way because you don't have the guys to get there. And by the time you circle back again, one of your guys has come open because your secondary is not good enough to stay with him for that long. So Iowa State's secondary allows Coach Haycock to gamble a little bit more and bring pressure to make it, to seal everything off. Don't give him an outlet. His only outlet is the sideline. And that's the way that you can set him up because a lot of other coordinators have tried, but they don't have the defensive backs, including a team like Oklahoma, especially a team like Oklahoma, doesn't have the secondary to match up with the pressures that they wanted to bring towards Mahomes. And for whatever reason, the offensive line for Texas Tech decided, I don't want to block anymore at certain points and just let guys through. So guys like Spencer Benton got pressures because offensive linemen just didn't block him.
Yeah.
Adam, you brought up Seneca. Yeah. He's the best former Cyclone player on Twitter right now.
And Dick. It's new. He just opened his account Dick. Like last week. Woody, your Twitter game needs some help. I think we all can agree on that. This is coming from someone who needs help on Twitter too.
You should take some lessons from Seneca.
Seneca is actually a really good follow.
Yeah.
Although I did get a statement that I never thought I would ever say. I had a tweet favorited by an astronaut. So.
Was it Clayton Anderson? Yeah, he favorites a lot of the tweets on the Cyclone Fanatic account.
Yeah, but I got a tweet favorited by an astronaut, so that's what I care about.
Wow. Fair enough. Now that pretty much makes you an astronaut.
It's by proxy. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get favored, if it gets favored by an astronaut, you're pretty much an astronaut.
All right, Adam, you said you had some questions.
Yeah, I put some questions up here on Twitter. I think a lot of fans are excited about the win. They want to know what Jeff Woody has to think. Question from Chad Ingles. What does Woody think about operating with two quarterbacks in the backfield at the same time?
That is a huge risk reward. The reason why, because the way that system would work, generally speaking, you'd have, it's done in a lot of like high schools. When you have two really good athletes, one that can run, one that can throw, you'd set one in one A gap and one in the other A gap. And if it's snapped to Joel, it's most likely going to be a run dominant play. If it's snapped to Park, it's most likely going to be a pass dominant play. Well, the problem is neither one of those guys has ever pass protected before. So regardless of what you want to do, if I see two quarterbacks in the backfield, I'm going to blitz the hell out of that. Because I know that one of those guys is dead because he's getting the ball, and the other one's dead because he can't pass protect. So if I bring six, even though you have six guys to block, the five offensive linemen are going to pick up five, and I have one free rusher that's going to just continually keep hitting the guy with the ball in the face. So it's a good thought, and because you're going to get a lot of pressures, you're going to get a lot of cover zeros, a lot of cover ones. But in college, you can roll the dice a little bit more because not everybody's going to be as bad defensively as Texas Tech is, because a team like Oklahoma, even though their secondary is bad, or a team like Oklahoma State is going to match up man-to-man and just blitz the hell out of a quarterback that can't pass protect. So it's a cool idea, and you might be able to throw it in for a changeup or two and run and just know that when we run this play, I'm going to snap it to Park and throw a lob to Lazard or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like it would be something that might work one time.
Yeah, it can't work all the time because your running back has to be a pass protector at worst, and at best has to be a pass protector who is also a receiving threat. And if the ball goes to landing, Park is essentially completely dead in run blocking and in pass pro. So if he doesn't have the ball in his hands as a football player, yeah, he's a great athlete, but he ain't David Montgomery. He ain't Mitchell Harker. He's not that guy to block and move and catch the ball.
You're telling me Mitch Harker is a better athlete than Joel Lanning?
They don't even need
Jacob Park.
They don't even need two actual quarterbacks out there when David Montgomery's already a quarterback.
And DeShonte Jones.
Yeah, see, they already got plenty of quarterbacks on the field.
Yeah, quarterbacks. There's a lot of stuff you can do with trick plays.
Like, how many freaking quarterbacks do you need on the field at one time?
Well, it's like baseball. I always talked to a college coach who said he would go recruit shortstops because they're always the best athlete on a baseball field. Quarterbacks are probably the same in high school. Yep. For a lot of schools, you put your quarterback
there.
Your
quarterback, running back, middle linebacker, strong safety. If you're recruiting any skill player, they're probably playing one of those four positions.
You threw running back in there because you're partial to the running back position.
Well, a lot of running backs, generally speaking, are quarterbacks that can't throw. So that guy. Just take that guy.
All right, got a question from Christopher Miller. Is there a way, speaking of running backs, to get the running backs to catch a few more passes? And also, will tight ends be used more in the passing game next year?
So, I'll answer those questions separately. Is there a way to get the running backs more involved in the passing game? Yeah. At some point, defenses are going to have to back out of coverage. Because
I think that the screen game is something that they want to explore a lot more like next year.
Right, but screen game's great when you have blitzes that don't involve like cover zero, cover one, because cover zero, cover one, there's a lot of open territory for your really skilled wide receivers, and rather than throwing a 0-yard pass and hoping they run, you can throw a slant to Butler, you can throw a slant to Epps or Jones or whoever, and you can get a quick route for catch the ball at 10 and still have the same open field in front of you. So one of the things to get the running backs more involved in the run game is next season, assuming that the system that they have right now with Lanning and Park continues, where Park is the predominant player and Lanning comes in on the other 40% of the snaps to run and kind of be an offhand thrower, they're going to have to pull guys out of the box. They're no longer going to be able to play cover one or a two-man. They're going to have to back out. They'll have to pull nickels and they'll have to pull the guys out of the box, which gives you more one-on-one matchups with a running back and a linebacker. So whether West Virginia does it, because they run a 3-3-5, which is a weird, funky defense, but it gives you one-on-one matchups with the running backs, their teams are going to have to open up, which is going to give the running backs more options. To answer question number two, Iowa State, with Harms and Chandler right now, Iowa State has two good blocking tight ends that aren't great receiving tight ends. Is it Chance Allen or is it Chase?
Chase.
Chase Allen, that kid is a receiving tight end. So when you have a threat like that, that's a completely different ball game. Because if you trot Sam Harms like they did against Kansas, where he ended up getting an offensive pass interference, you run trips to one side and you flex the tight end out to the other, you have the Rob Gronkowski, Jimmy Graham situation, where you've got a bigger guy that can physically beat up a corner, or they run the corner to the trip side and move a linebacker out there, and then you got a guy that can outrun them. Right now, Iowa State doesn't have the personnel with Chandler and Harms. Mm-hmm. They're good blockers, but they're not one-on-one matchup nightmares, so you can't force the defense into something you don't want. So next year with Allen, presuming that he is as good of a receiver as we expect him to be, the tight end becomes a lot more involved in the passing game, but just not quite right now because of the personnel.
Well, I think it'll be interesting, too, because they've got that Charlie Kolar, who's committed to him right now. He's kind of in that same mold.
A big athletic tight end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still interested to see what they'll do with Dylan Sonner. I still think they should move him to tackle, but have you seen that kid? Mm-hmm. That's a big boy.
He's, 6'7", 270,
280. I mean, yeah. To me, that just screams a guy that's going to be a tackle
or
someday.
Chandler. Or use him in that role where you have your predominant blocking tight end.
Yeah.
Because you can – Matt Campbell wants to use two tight end sets because when you have two tight ends and one of your tight ends is Chase Allen, it's not a true two tight end set because you can go heavy and then the very next snap you can flex him out as a wide receiver and then the very next snap you can come back to heavy. Or the very next snap you can take Montgomery and Allen and put him out wide and you have a tight end in the backfield as a pass pro. Like, you can do so many different things with a hybrid tight end guy, which is why they wanted Allen so bad.
Well, and you mentioned the Patriots. That's what made them so good when
exactly.
They had Aaron Hernandez and Gronk.
Yeah,
you know, he was a guy that could catch, and was a really good blocker. Plus, he could catch as well.
And they went 0-2 personnel.
Yeah.
Yeah, 0-2 personnel, which means zero running backs, two tight ends. What they did with Hernandez and Gronkowski, and Hernandez ended up playing the running back position, which is that skill set's very rare.
He's a freak.
He was a freak.
Yeah,
he probably still is, but yeah.
Not in a great football playing context. But that type of flexibility a really athletic tight end gives you, and although Harms and Chandler are really good players, they're not great receivers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, one more question here. Lee actually asked three questions. I'm going to ask one that I think I hear a lot in the stands too, and I think it'll be a good question. Late defensive line subbing is wasting at least one time out of game. Why is it happening so often 10 games in? I think I know the answer to this, but I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
So this is one thing that I really – so I'm a guy that – I love Bill Belichick from a coaching perspective. I'd love to play for him. And I was watching –
I'm sure he'll hear this and he'll give you a call.
You actually seem like a player that would fit into the Patriot way.
You'd have to find one niche. but then you love guys like Greg Popovich or guys like Jim Harbaugh or even guys like Nick Saban with – finding the loopholes in the rule and exploiting it as much as you possibly can. So the reason why I think there's late defensive substitutions, probably 30% of the time it's because a guy is more tired than they're giving credit for and they just have to run somebody in to get him out. But the majority of the time, against a really fast offense, you have the chance to match a substitution. So if the offensive personnel shifts, so they run a wide receiver in for another wide receiver, they substituted. No, it doesn't matter who you're substituting on and off. The defense then gets a chance to match that substitution. Because if you go from four wide receivers and one tight end to three running backs and two receivers, like, that's a completely different personnel grouping that the defense should have the chance to match. Well, there's no set and determined time frame for what a match substitution allows. So if there's a 24-second play clock or 25-second play clock, if it takes the offense 6 seconds to make the determination of who to run on and off, play clock's already down to 19. Well, if you wait another 2 or 3 seconds before you run a defensive lineman in because the referee's standing over the ball, then it takes your big boys that time to get on and off. That forces the offense to slow down to the point where you can get a play call in, and they can't snap the ball until 10 or 12 seconds because the referee doesn't even move away from the ball. So these late defensive line substitutions are mostly them just pushing the boundary of saying, like, you're going to give us time to match. We're playing Texas Tech. We're playing Baylor. We're playing Oklahoma State. We're playing Oklahoma. Cool. We're going to match you in the slowest way possible to give us time so it doesn't become this like those offenses want
to
do.
And I think to Lee's point, too, then sometimes Iowa State calls a timeout, I think, for two reasons. Sometimes I think the refs miss a substitution, right? And then the coaching staff, you see him yelling on the sidelines, hey, we have a chance, and then Campbell's, you know, nothing to do, but he just calls a timeout. And then sometimes they trick you, right? And you're kind of caught, and then the best thing to do, rather than let them score a touchdown, is call timeout.
They run in a guy, the person that comes to mind is like Michael Agnew from Ole Miss, who's a tight end by position, but he plays more of a wide receiver spot. So if you have a guy for other teams that plays like we're talking about in Allen, where they run in a tight end and a running back, and you think, okay, they're running in a heavy personnel, and all of a sudden you run in instead of sending in Spencer Benton, you send in Vernell Trent, and you're like, oh shoot, we sent in a run set and they're in a totally spread open pass sign. This isn't the right matchup, and you have to burn.
And this is completely, the game has changed so much in what we've seen 5 years ago. This never used to be an issue, but players are so much more versatile now with what they do. And then this is a new rule too, right? Mm-hmm. Before, they used to be able to sub on offense, and the defense, if they didn't, they were pretty much screwed.
Yeah. Which is why a team like Oregon, a team like Oklahoma, could rattle off a play on the game clock. They would rattle off a play every 14 seconds.
Yep.
Like this. But when you...
Did they change the rule because...
it was like four or five years ago they did that, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was in the middle of me.
Is it because Saban threw a little hissy fit?
Yeah. It actually was, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is the way to combat that is Baylor... I hate the fact that I'm referencing Baylor because that's a complete freaking dumpster fire. But the way that Art Briles and Kendall Briles ran their offense is the way you prevent against a substitution is don't substitute. And how do you do that? Well, shoot, my guys are tired. They have half field routes where one side will run like 2 yard hitches and just they're not anywhere near the play, and it lets the receivers catch their breath. And then the other side of the field is running verticals or goes or something like that. And they'll come back and do a run play. And those guys that are fresh are then the play after the run play. Those guys run verticals. So in order to run an effective up tempo now, you can't continually substitute fresh wide receivers in against tired defensive backs. Your guys have to be in shape too. So there's a way around it. It's just not a lot of people have adopted the Baylor system. From a pure game planning perspective, Baylor's great. From everything else, I can't say a positive thing.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll see you again next week.
It's been fun.
For the final episode, season one.
When will this be out on DVD, or will it be on Amazon Prime or Netflix or anything like that?
We're coming to Netflix in December.
Work on a Netflix deal.
Big time.
Thanks again to our presenting sponsor, Agrigold. We'll be back next week at 12:15. Thanks for watching, everybody.